Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Good evening, everybody. It's Matthew Donaghy here. Just to let you all know, Penny's unfortunately not able to make the show due to technical difficulties. However, I have Adam Weller with me, my wingman for the evening. So I'll just give Adam the opportunity to say hello.
Yeah, hello. Good evening, everybody.
Yep, so we got a really interesting show to talk about this evening. Certainly brought up some stuff for me when I was writing around it. Strap in, because it's going to be a real interesting one, and quite hard-hitting. What we're going to be discussing is sort of toxic parenting and how you can overcome and reclaim your life around the sort of the hurtful legacy you've experienced. When you were a child, did your parents tell you you were bad or you were worthless? Did your parents use physical pain or discipline? Did you have parents take care of you? Or did they sort of neglect you because of their problems? Were you often frightened of your parents? Did your parents do anything to you that had been kept secret? And I'm sure by now there's many of you saying yes, 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 all of the above. And it's seeing how, A, it affects your own childhood, but then how we can take it on and actually give our own children the same experience, not through want of trying, but just because of some of the patterns and behaviours and thought forms that are laid down within our childhood. So now that you're an adult, do your parents still treat you as a child? Do you have an intense emotional or physical reactions after spending time with your parents? Do your parents control you with threats or guilt? Do they still manipulate you with money? Do you feel that no matter what you do, you're never good enough for your parents, and that you've always got to sort of prove yourself or be what they think you should be, rather than actually who you are, who it feels right to be yourself? And I think just using some of my own personal experience, I think we can all say that there's parts of our childhood that were absolutely fantastic, and parents, bless them, that there is no book on parenting or perfect parenting. No one was given a manual on what to do with this little human that they've produced, and how to deal with all the behaviours and the discipline and that sort of thing. And it's we learn from what we've been taught. And in my life, I had finances were absolutely brilliant. But what I lacked was love. And because I resonated more with my father, his discipline was more consistent. Whereas on the other side, I would kind of got told off if I was good, and I got told off if I was bad. But very much being told something over and over again, not only do you believe it, but you change your behavior around it. So for me, it didn't matter to me whether I was good or bad. In fact, I would usually go to the extreme and be really bad, because then I know Dad would get involved. And ultimately, Dad would discipline me, But then he would tell me he loved me and give me an explanation as to why. And that, to me, really resonated because it was pure. Whereas from my mother, it was regular. I was always sort of told, why can't you be more like your brother? You'll never be successful. You're not intelligent. You're just a pain. And very much that's probably what my mother experienced from her parents. And she's just doing the same behavior to me as was done to her. There was a really interesting article I was reading about emotional wellness and saying that people that have experienced pain don't truly know how to treat people well because they haven't been treated well themselves. We've learned things that aren't particularly good. And don't get me wrong, with a lot of these sort of patterns, we a lot of people out there would say, well, as a parent, I'm not going to do this and I'm not going to do that because that was done to me and I didn't think it was great. However, there's a lot of stuff that we're not even aware of. And patience is one that really comes up for me because the amount of parents that can't hold patience for their child. And it's because we've all had an emotional traumatic experience, certainly through childhood, the school years, puberty, secondary school, and all that. By the time you get to adulthood and then you're then responsible for a child, when they're coming to you for attention, your buttons are being pushed. And the reason your buttons are being pushed are because of all the emotional trauma that you've never dealt with. So you can find yourself losing your temper with a child and saying, not now, just give me 5 minutes, because you need to process it yourself. It brings up stuff for you. Would you say any of that resonates with you, Adam, from your experience?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I do sort of want to almost say again, you know, it's very much not about them, and you know, it's not like they're intentionally sort of trying to do it. You know, but I think 99% of parents out there sort of do the best they can, you know, with what they've got, and they don't really, you know, it's not, like I said, not a conscious that they're doing it. You know, like I say, a lot of it, and this is where I think you get the problem, you know, because sort of they can only go by what their childhood was like, and their parents go by what their childhood was like, and it takes someone to actually stop and look and go, well, how does that make me feel, and you know, how does that affect my behaviour? Because we end up carrying these things for years and years and years, and maybe even all our life. And not necessarily being aware of it, you know, the patterns of behaviour that we sort of portray, and you know, you find yourself doing the same thing whenever you're in that situation, and it's like, well, why do I do that? You know, and sometimes you have to, you know, it takes you to sort of almost go back to the beginning and go back to your childbirth and right, okay, so where was my childhood not good? You know, what was the lacks? Where were the issues, you know, to share a little bit about sort of one of my experiences. And I think it works as a great example for, you know, that the parents are just doing what they can in the situation they're in. Now, as a child, my mum used to be a childminder. So obviously that was her job, and she was paid to do that to provide for the family and that side of things. So that was great, you know. For me, as a child, what I saw was, well, mum would look after all the people that she was paid to look after first and sort me out last. So for 25 years of my life, in certain situations, I'd have this feeling of, why am I always bottom of the list? You know, why am I never anybody's priority? Why am I always last? And the reason I'd been carrying that is because as a child, from what I saw, not being able to understand in the context of having to pay a mortgage and all the other responsibilities that parents have, I couldn't see that as a child. I just saw my mum putting their needs above mine and putting me bottom of the list. And it, like I say, it takes that actually looking back to the root of it to be able to clear that, to be able to move forwards, and then when you get into a position of having children, or if you already have children, then actually being able to honour them a bit more, as well as honouring your work commitments and, you know, your general life commitments.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. What it brought up for me was, obviously, I think a lot of us don't see the other side of things. So, for me, there was a little bit of like, dad's never there, because my dad ran a successful company and he did work a lot of sort of long hours. And when you sort of step back and you look at, well, where was he coming from? What was his intention? He was just trying to do the best that he could, the best that you know at the time. We're not saying people are bad. Obviously, behaviour is just behaviour, and we do it sometimes because we think that's what's best. When actually, when you look at the needs of a child, it's very much the nurturing and having time with them. And how many of you could put your hand up and say, you know what, I'd rather live in a smaller house with less things, but have my parents there. And that's one that resonates with a lot of people. So for me, like I said, the financial thing was great. And obviously when we got the really nice holidays, getting to spend time with the family was really good. But at the same time, very much when we had that quality time, we did the really important things. Things were very much kept sort of simple. So like really nice long walks in the woods and playing on bikes and climbing trees and just having fun and doing all the things that are free, because actually it doesn't always have to cost a lot to have children. You can just teach them and bring them up and in a very cheap way, because I think a lot of kids nowadays are sort of handed a phone or some kind of device, and they miss all the good juicy stuff. So I would imagine a lot of children are learning behaviours that we have. They see adults with phones in their hand and they want to be playing on the devices. And it's like, what would you want for your child? Would you want your child to spend all the time on a device, or would you rather they were out in nature socialising with other kids? So I think it's really, really interesting subject. There's so many sort of sides to it. So Adam was talking about, obviously things can run down the line, so we end up doing things that our parents have done. There's also the side of behaviours where they're ancestral, which can actually go back sort of seven generations. I've had an experience of this with one of my clients who was dealing with the realisation around there being some dark sexual behaviour within the family, and not just their family units, but other members of their family as well. And when they worked it back, it was very much it was a control thing. This is the thing, we live in a very different time, and things that were seen as just how it is, especially the sort of the sexist side I'm talking about, where women weren't respected as much as they should be. Everybody is equal, regardless of any colour or race or anything. It's like, we're all pink inside. No one's any better than anybody else. But in certain times, women were treated badly and weren't respected. And doing the work and doing the emotional work around something specific when you're dealing with ancestral stuff, you can actually heal up to, well, you have to go back seven generations generally. But once you heal that behaviour for yourself in this lifetime, it also sets the bar for the future. These are patterns of behaviour which have been indoctrinated into us. And so, like we say, this can work on a very deep level. And the way to change it, and obviously not take it onto your own children. And I've had a really, really good experience of that. Funny enough, looking after Penny's son, Hector, because he's so free. One thing that when I was learning how to discipline children in a healthy way was you don't use sympathy. So if they fall over and they bang their head, you don't go rushing in. I mean, as an adult, you get a good perspective of whether they've really hurt themselves or not, but it's not jumping in and trying to rescue that child, but allow that child to process what they're going through. Because most of the time, you'll watch them and they'll run into something, and my niece is a great example of this as well, will run into a table, they'll bang their head, they'll be slightly shocked, and if it's just a little bang, they will literally look at you, and if you're all right with it, they're all right with it. And by this, I don't mean if your kid trips over and cracks their head and blood's pouring out, you don't rush over. However, it's allowing them to be free within themselves, because otherwise we're just putting our fears and our worries on them, and that's the last thing we want to do. We want them to grow up to be sensible but fearless, to the point where yes, they won't run out in the road, but when it comes to climbing trees, they're up there before you get there. Because I think we're so protective over our children in some healthy ways, but some very unhealthy ways as well. We restrict them, and it's because we've been restrictive. We've been told over years that maybe your dreams won't come true, and oh well, life's life, and you've just got to crack on with it, and time's a healer, so you've just got to get over it. And it's about turning around and saying, well, that may be true for some people, but actually that's not true for me, because for me it's about me dealing with my stuff. And we'll continue this after the break.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Hello, welcome back. I think the important thing to remember here, and just to reiterate what I said earlier, is behaviour is just behaviour. And I've done many behaviours in my life which, quite frankly, absolutely stink. Probably half of which I was not even conscious of. And these were behaviours that were sort of formed around decisions that I would had made. And because I didn't feel confident, I felt worthless, like I wasn't good enough, I couldn't achieve anything. Because I had that ingrained thought patterns around myself, obviously that turns into feelings of low self-esteem, lack of respect for self. I was also not treating others like that, because if you can't treat yourself with love and respect, how do you expect yourself to treat everybody else? And it's true in certain ways that you can form behaviors around or notice behaviors around that you'll do something for somebody else, but you wouldn't do that for yourself. So you may treat somebody where you wouldn't treat yourself. And I think pretty much all adults now, we're all survivors of toxic parenting in some form. And we're not blaming parents here. We're just saying that we've all learned behaviours which are not helpful. And actually, we really need to, everybody needs to sort of just take a look at themselves and ask, like, can we improve this? And of course the answer is yes, and I've done it myself in my life using subconscious connected breathwork. In the UK it's Breath for Life breathwork, and that's helped me not only deal with my feelings around what I was told when I was a child or the experiences I had, losing the death of friends and family, and because I've been emotionally able to deal with them, I don't then have to act out the behaviour of somebody that doesn't feel good enough and doesn't feel worthless. And when you look into that behaviour, you can see the side of, well, I can see that they don't respect themselves because they was told they were told that as a child, and They don't believe that they can achieve things because they've been told that they couldn't do that. But there's also a flip side to that, which is ego. And when ego doesn't feel loved and appreciated, it will battle back. And actually, if you don't care about yourself, you don't care about others, and you will sort of, you'll put yourself first and you won't really care and be considerate. I know obviously a lot of people, we call it the rat race in London. If you get on the tube in the morning, it's like going to war. Nobody's got time for anybody, nobody says hello to anybody, people bump into each other, nobody lets anybody go first, and nobody has a time for anybody else, and it's more often than not because actually we don't have time for ourselves the way that we feel. And so it's really, really interesting how we don't realise we're running on these patterns half the time. For me, I didn't realise, especially the ego side of things, how I was treating others. And when I looked at it, it was kind of like, whoa, there's some things there that I really don't want to admit to. But it brings me back to that telling the absolute complete truth, tact or tar, and it's taking absolute responsibility for that. So it's, yeah, it's a really, the only way to deal with it is with an emotional release tool, for want of a better expression. And I know Adam's had some experience of this, so I've just asked the question to Adam. Do you feel that obviously doing breath work and the emotional intelligence work has helped you to sort of come up with ways in which you would parent as you wouldn't have done before until you understood?
Yeah, very much so, you know, and for me, it's taken, and okay, I don't have children, I have nieces and nephews and that sort of thing, but it's taken sort of my understanding of emotions and the energetics of how they work to realise where sort of, and don't wrong, there is no right or wrong, but realise where sort of people would go wrong, as you would say, you know. And it's things like, I don't know, I'm looking after my nephew for the weekend, and he does something, you know, makes a mess for no reason, or plays up, as kids do, because, you know, kids will be kids and they like to be mischievous here and there. Yeah. All the while, I have emotions around that. So if that makes me angry, I will not approach him now and then. I will ask him to stop doing that, and I'll explain to him, no, that's not acceptable. Can't do that. Oh, sorry, you can't do that. But if I'm still in that, you know, if I'm still angry about the situation, I can't fully discipline him until I've cleared that and I can come to him clear without any of my emotions then being put onto him. Because I think you see it so often where, I don't know, you're in a supermarket and it probably transpires that the kid's not getting the attention they want from mum or dad, so they start kicking their feet and having a tantrum in the middle of the aisle, at which point the parent gets really angry, shouts at them, smacks their bum, and off they go, and no one's happy. And it's like, well, actually, what's happening there is the parent's getting angry, which is their emotions, and taking it out on the child. And it's, you know, it really does help to have understanding and clarity around emotions and how they work and how they affect others, but also that within yourself. You know, I, as sort of, you know, we both use the same tool of Breath for Life, breath work, and have done lots of work together over the years. It's, you know, from some of my experiences, knowing how some of the situations in my childhood and some of the things that my parents used to do have affected me, and, you know, like I say, some of those things I carried for maybe 25 years before I actually managed to change them. So when you can actually have a real understanding of that, you can then really begin to see how we do need to be careful around our children, because, you know, they are just like sponges. They're, for the first 7 years at least, they are wired to learn, and it's just information. So, you know, very much like you were saying about with your niece and Hector, when they bump their head and it's like, oh, wibble wobble, and off they go running around again. If every time, you know, your child falls over, you're rushing over and picking them up and cuddling them as much as, yes, it's good to show them love, but actually if they don't need it, it can sort of end up going the other way. And actually what you end up doing is disempowering that child, because it's saying, every time you hurt yourself, don't worry, I will fix it for you. And then you actually have to look at it, and it's, you know, could you honestly put your hand on your heart and say, you know, did my child need me to go and pick them up and cuddle them and tell them it would be okay? Or did I, as a parent, need to do that for them? Because, like I say, that takes the power away from them. You know, the child, if it's serious, they know where mum is, they know where dad is, and they will go running. Whereas if they get used to the fact of, oh, the slightest bump and I get attention, that can then very easily lead into a pattern of behaviour of, oh, well, mummy and daddy are talking and actually they're not really paying me much attention, so I'm going to fall over, pretend I've hurt myself, start crying, and, oh, look, they're both here. Mm. So, yeah, I do. I think, you know, emotional understanding, whether it is within self or with others, it is fundamental, and also, as you were saying, you know, whether it be going back to ancestral stuff or just, you know, in the more here and now, more in this lifetime, the more of this sort of thing that you can clear, the freer it is. And, you know, if you've already got children or when you go on to have children, you're giving them a blank page. You're giving them more sort of almost creative genius to work with, because it's like they haven't got all this stuff that, oh, well, my mum done that, so I do that, and well, my dad taught me like that, so I do it like that. It's about seeing your child, seeing their needs, and working to their authentic needs and letting them grow. Because a lot of the time, if you look at children when they're playing and they're happy, as adults, we could learn more from them than they could for us, because they have that freedom of, they're not emotionally suppressed and clogged down with all the filters and the things they get thrown at us through life.
Yeah, I think children are very, very in the moment. I mean, you can, many times I've had the experience where sort of like my nephew or niece has been crying, and we've dealt with the situation, whatever it be. Maybe they have hurt themselves, or they've sort of just upset, which kids can go through. But very much they deal with the emotion there and then they're off again. Whereas if an adult is told something sort of disappointing, oh, we're not going to the park today, or we're not going to the park right now, it will be in a couple of hours, an adult would go through a far larger emotional experience than a child would. The child would go, right, okay, well, I'm not particularly happy about that. I'll have a little moan and, oh, and before you know it, they're off out on the trampoline again. Whereas an adult would spend 2 hours going over it and feeling bad, because they weren't getting their needs met. And that's just because of the amount of emotional trauma they've sort of built up. And just going back to some of the expansion at the start around sort of how's your experience with your parents as an adult? Because honestly, from my experience up to my mid, I would say 30s, before I sort of done this, the deep emotional work, my relationship with my father really wasn't very good. And now I have one of the best sort of open, honest relationships ever. And it's because I had my father on a pedestal. So I was one of these people that always felt guilty because I hadn't perhaps achieved what I thought he had achieved by that age, and that I would sort of maybe perhaps wasn't as intelligent or as business minded or whatever. It could be a plethora of doubts. We always feel that we have to please our parents and not disappoint them, and the truth is you can't disappoint your parents. Like they'll love you no matter what and support you no matter what. What a parent really wants to see is their child growing and having fun and being themselves, so you can't let them down. But I found when I started having sort of like difficult conversations with my dad, because I think certainly around families and sort of, yeah, any siblings, it can be really difficult. And I think it's hard hitting to say, but you know, you can love your family, but we're not bound to like all of their behaviours. And accept some of their behaviours. So obviously, once I'd started doing some of the deep emotional work, I was gaining a lot more confidence, a lot more clarity around who I was and what my beliefs were, as opposed to the beliefs that were put on me from childhood. So the beliefs of my mother, the beliefs of my father, and some from siblings as well. Because obviously there's a lot of things that siblings say to each other that could be quite hurtful, and we don't think about them at the time. But yeah, so obviously when I started having those difficult conversations with my dad, I would sort of, I wasn't worried about disappointing him and saying, oh, well, I can't say that because that might offend him. But if there were some behaviours there that I didn't like, I would bring them up with him and say, you know, that may be true for you. And this is the thing, we don't have to do it in a hurtful way. It can be done in a very tactile way, and it can be actually, for me, an enlightening experience with my dad, because it was about sort of saying, you know, Dad, that may be true for you and for your generation. However, that's not true for me, and I'm choosing to do it a different way. And the closeness we've gained from having those difficult conversations and talking about the past and very honestly talking about how things were and what was going on for them, because obviously as an adult you get to talk to them as an adult and find out what was going on for them, and within that you can heal a lot between you. And I think for me it was a really, like I say, an enlightening experience, because I now know that I'm not going to take any of those patterns through when I look after my children. And I've certainly used those plans with my niece and nephew. And people say you have such a good relationship with them and like you're so close. And it's because I allow that, very much like Adam was saying, and I love the statement, it's like giving them a blank page. You give them healthy boundaries so that they can play safely within them, but then there's no limits as to what they do. And I really appreciate the relationship I have, and it's such an honour, for want of a better word, that I get to have that experience, because there's nothing better than joining in with the kids and letting your imagination run wild. I mean, I don't know about all kids, but most boys enjoy climbing trees, and there's nothing I like more than scrambling around in the woods with my nephew. And sometimes he looks at me and it's like a smile, but he thinks I'm a little bit crazy. I'm like his crazy uncle. I'll do anything. I'm sort of up for anything. But at the same time, it's one of the bits he said he loves about me, because he said, you just always want to have fun. And I think, well, what else would you want to do? And it's by me gaining the freedom in my life emotionally, not only has it transformed my life, but all my relationships as well. So I think it's key for people to, how can you change this? Well, it's just about changing yourself, and dealing with some of your emotional baggage so that you don't then take it on and teach your children the same experience. Obviously there's big generation gaps between different generations, so my dad was born 59, so it was sort of not long after the sort of 15 years after the war, so there was a rise where you were getting out of the rationing and that sort of thing, and families were just getting sort of back to normal, and obviously the country, so they would have had some pretty dark times that we wouldn't have had to experience. I was born the end of the 70s, so business was booming at that time, and so I had a far easier experience in some ways than my father would. But looking at the different generations, there's such big changes, and people aren't able to sort of get used to the fact that, oh, just because your experience was like that, it doesn't mean that what you're saying to do as parenting is correct, because those sort of styles are very much for the dark ages. I mean, you couldn't parent a child in the 50s the same as you parent a child today. But I think very much the emotional work is the important work to do. And what we want for our children more than anything is for them to have the best possible experience. So it's just about allowing them to be themselves. And if we're doing that for them, then we should be doing that for ourselves in our adult lives as well. So we're just going into a break. We'll see you after.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hello and welcome back. Just continuing, just to give Adam an opportunity. Was there anything that came up for you? Anything you'd like to add to what I was saying before we move forward?
I mean, you know, quite a lot from, you know, obviously starting to talk about experiences as an adult, and you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to, but you know, it does bring up sort of some of the many difficult conversations that I've had, you know, with my mother and that sort of thing. Obviously with my dad left planet on 2011, so just mum around. So, you know, some of the conversations I've had with her and how that has allowed our relationship to grow, and actually being real and being honest and being able to say, actually, mum, this is what I need from you now. I mean, it's great for both parties, because she's not there trying to treat a 30-year-old man like a child, but actually she's still being my mum and helping and supporting me, just in a different way, you know, because sort of they, you know, mums are, they, I mean, they're brilliant, they care and they love and this, that, the other, but sometimes actually your needs change and it's just like, well, actually, mum, this is what I need from you now. And it's like, I don't think you'd get that without the difficult conversations. And I think, albeit changing subjects slightly, the thing that really resonated for me with what you were saying was around boundaries, being able to have and police good boundaries, you know, obviously bringing it back sort of to the childhood and to children, you know, because I think that is important, you know. It's like, yes, that, you know, with children there needs to be that discipline and there needs to be those boundaries to give them the, you know, give them the rules of the game so they can play safely, sort of thing, and then leave them to it. because it's, you know, it's like you say, it's about setting a boundary and okay, but you know, putting some things in place to keep them safe and this, that, the other, but also being firm but fair if and when they do cross those boundaries, because you know, it's, once again, it's kids are kids, you know, if there's a big red button that says don't push or a wet paint sign, then you know what's going to happen. But yeah. It's finding, or for me, what I think, you know, to ways to sort of negate the toxic parenting, it's about finding the right ways of discipline, you know, sort of emotionally clear, that side of things, explaining it, and then having things in place so it doesn't happen again, you know. I mean, sort of talking from experience with, you know, with sort of my nieces and nephews, you know, I very much use a three strikes and you're out. So I don't know, they're sort of flying a remote control around their head and you know, it could sort of break something, it'll be dangerous. So it's like, oh, put that down, please. You know, very rarely do I have to get to the third time, because they know on that third occasion that actually, you know, I will take action. I will remove what they're flying around their head, and I will explain to them, listen, when you can play with it in a safe manner where you're not likely to hurt yourself or someone else, then you can have it back. So it allows you to still police them and not let them run riot, but actually it also allows you to, and I don't like to use the word control, but it actually allows you to have some control over their behaviour and how they are, as to keep them safe and very much like you said, keep yeah. them, you know, keep them on the playing field and keep them in between the rules.
Yeah, very much so. I think as adults, we tend to think we know what's best, and a lot of the time we need to sort of step back, and very much when you said about your mother's needs, it's kind of like, our needs may not be what's best for our child at that time, so we'll sort of stop them doing what they're doing at that time. And yeah, I mean, I just wanted to just put it out there. Adam and I have obviously worked on a personal level and within Acorn to Oak as well, and just share your passion for teaching children Reiki, and what brought that up for you, because I think that's, for me, when you tell me, it really, really resonates, and your passion to help children actually have a better start in life, I think, is what we all really want.
Absolutely. And it is exactly that, you know, for me. Sort of in with sort of developing a course of Reiki for children, you know, I think Reiki is one of the most powerful tools in the universe that, you know, we as humans have access to, sort of whether we're conscious of it or not. And for me, it's just such a good idea. Like, you know, I found Reiki and Breath of Life, Breathwork and Energy Medicine around the age of 24. And I've always been really grateful that I found it at such a young age. So if we can introduce kids of, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old to the world of energetics and emotions and Reiki and a different way of doing things, it just makes a whole lot of sense to me. And, you know, you don't need the in-depth ins and outs full understandings of it, because it blows plenty of adults' minds, let alone children. but you know, very much what you say, it's giving them the best chance in life, giving them the best start, you know, because life for everybody is a playground, you know, and there are certain sort of laws and you know, spiritual laws or laws of the universe, however you like to refer to them. And it is that, let's teach these kids these rules or laws of the universe and then let them play. Because that's what 99% of the population isn't doing. And that's where, you know, as adults, you get bogged down into the 9 to 5.
We're taking life way too seriously, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's that we've got all these responsibilities. And yes, okay, you have to allocate time for them and that and the other, but It is. It's where is it? Getting back to the basics, getting out in nature, having fun, watching your children grow, seeing them running around crazy, chasing them with a hose pipe or whatever it is. It's about giving them a chance, letting them have those experiences and see what life is really about, not just what we're always told. Oh, well, you should do this and you should do that and you have to do this and you have to do that. And, you know, yes, okay, we need a certain amount of those to help us through the school system and that side of things. But there is so much more to life than that. And like I say, once you know what you're doing and the rules of the game that you're playing, that is called life, then you're just free to have fun. And, you know, I mean, any parents that are listening to this, can you honestly say that no, you don't want your children to have more fun and more joy and more love and greater success in life? You know, and I think you would all say, well, that's exactly what I want for my child. So it is just, you know, take the time to have a think and maybe think, well, actually, yeah, they've shared some experiences. So where can I see that in my life? And do it without judgment or any angst. You know, there is no, oh, well, I've done that, so I'm a bad mother. It's really not about that. It's just about looking at it and
going, it's not about the blame, is it? It's about the acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely. It's,
So I think the best way to parent your children is to first parent yourself and make sure that you're clear. One comment you made earlier really resonated, talking about the parents in the supermarket, because how many of you out there would take a breath and take a couple of seconds to decide how to respond to your child? Because very much like Adam said earlier, if his nephew's playing up or this, that and the other, it may make him angry or frustrated. However, he won't respond in that moment when he's angry and he's frustrated. He'll bring it within, take a breath, compose himself, acknowledge the emotions he's feeling, and allow him to let them go so that he can then respond to the child in a clear emotional space. Because otherwise, what we're often doing is emotionally vomiting on that child, and we're just throwing anger and frustration at them because the fact that they're playing with a TV controller happens to wind us up. And it's kind of like, that's where I certainly didn't realize how I was responding to people, because I wasn't taking the time to take a breath and say, actually, that's annoying me. However, does that make it wrong, what they're doing? No, it doesn't. It just means that it's making me feel an emotion. So then I'm vomiting on them and almost blaming the child for how I'm feeling. Whereas actually what they're doing doesn't make it wrong. It's just responding to that child in the moment, in the anger. And I think that was one of the things that I've worked so hard on to change, because I didn't want to be responding to people in that way when I was emotional. And you can see it a lot out in public where people are other adults responding with other adults, and they're quite frankly, their behaviour is totally unacceptable. They could be swearing, insulting, there could be some physical stuff going on, and this can be over anything. I mean, this could be over someone cutting someone up in traffic. And if you think about the actual situation, and I wanted to get in front of them and they wanted to get in front of me, and well I'm not having it, and you've got these two battles of the egos and behaviors just exploding. And again, it's all down to the build-up of emotional trauma, but that's the last way we really want to react to someone. And again, it's only through looking at my own behaviour and reflecting on it as a situation. So what happened in that moment? Well, I lost my temper with somebody. Well, what was good about that? Well, the fact that I realised it happened. What was bad? I felt guilty. I felt I said something to that person which wasn't particularly enlightened. And then go down and it's, what would you do differently next time? And it's like, I'd take a breath and respond in a different way. So what's the lesson in learning? To slow things down, to take a breath, acknowledge your emotions before you respond to other people. Because ultimately that we can respond in ways that we're not pleased with. But the trouble with that is if you don't reflect on it and you don't attempt to make any change of behaviour and you just make them wrong, we're all just going through life making everybody else wrong and making ourselves right. And again, this is some of the patterns which within toxic parenting we can all change. So thank you very much for listening. Really appreciate Adam being on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, brilliant.
If you've got any questions, require any coaching or anything like that, please get in touch with Acorn to Oak and we'll be happy to help you with any of your issues or questions. So thank you very much and we'll see you next week.
Yep, see you all again soon.